Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of CR Arthritis. I'm Kelly Lenvoy, VP of Communications and Public Affairs at ACE, and it's my pleasure today to be speaking with Dr. Cohen Tarvart. He's a professor of medicine, University of Alberta in Edmonton, and he is a new guest for us, and a great opportunity for our audience to meet you, Dr. Cohen Tarvart. And we're really pleased for you to be with us today. We're going to talk, have a couple of focuses on the interview today. We're going to talk about your participation at the annual meeting, and then we're going to look at some of the work you're leading at the U of A. So to start off with, maybe just tell us what it is you're doing at the meeting. I understand you're in one of the themed controversial subjects sessions. What will you be discussing with your partners?
Yeah, so during the meeting, there's a new subject, which is the controversies in rheumatology. And we will discuss long COVID, whether the rheumatologist has a role or not in the management of patients with long COVID. And I will take the standpoint, the point of view that the rheumatologist has an important role in managing patients with long COVID. In all case, about 10% of the people that have COVID will develop long COVID. So also 10% of our patients, our rheumatology patients, will have long COVID. And after 1 year, it is at least 5% of the people who still have symptoms of long COVID. Long COVID symptoms are very diverse. So ranging from fatigue, post-exertional malaise, joint and muscle pain, loss of taste and smell, chest pain, but nearly everything can be combined with a COVID infection or occur after our COVID infection. Our point of view is that actually long COVID is not that much different than post-viral myalgic encephalomyelitis or chronic fatigue syndrome. So what we do in here in Alberta is that we define long COVID patients as patients who fulfill the international classification criteria for ME slash CFS, which is more or less similar to the Canadian classification criteria. Those are quite strict. So patients are not a little bit tired, but they really are extremely tired. And after they do something extra, they are totally exhausted and cannot function normally. So they develop brain fog after severe brain fog after doing extra exercises. By defining long COVID in that way, we did do studies where we found real differences with people who are healthy or with people who have acute COVID or with people who recovered from COVID. And not surprisingly, one of the major findings is that patients do produce less ATP. ATP is the energy. So in the mitochondria, energy, the energy plant of the cell, ATP has to be formed. And if you have less ATP formation, you can imagine that there's a lack of energy, not only in the cell, but in the whole person. So that was not that much surprising. Furthermore, we found many different other metabolic differences between long COVID patients and others, such as in the tryptophan metabolism. tryptophanase is well known to be very important for serotonin production, and serotonin is of course having different issues. It's the precursor of melatonin. That means that you're not sleeping well, and serotonin is important for getting depressed. So there has been studies now in the Netherlands performed that SSRI, medication that increase the serotonin, actually are beneficial for patients with long COVID. Most importantly, it's not only tryptophan that's low in our patients, but it's also other amino acids. And we found sarcosine and serine as two important other amino acids that are low. Why are these amino acids low? We think that's due to the fact that there's viral persistence of the COVID virus in the gut. And the cells in the gut defend themselves then to switch off the possibility to absorb amino acids. Why is it important? Well, there have been studies done with sarcosine and serine in patients, in psychiatric patients, who had severe brain fog. And it proved that these supplementation with these amino acids actually improved their brain fog. So that's a nice new policy that we are currently studying here in Edmonton to see whether indeed brain fog can be ameliorated just with a food additive, a supplement, not that difficult and not that toxic at all. So those are things that we will discuss. I think that rheumatologists have an important role in managing these patients. We are the ones who have the most experience also in patients actually with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, because those are the two things that the patients have. So we should be in the front of that, because one of the issues internationally is that these long COVID patients feel desolated. So they don't get the appreciation that they are ill from the doctors. Also people in the environment, they don't believe, because you can't see that they're ill. So I think it's important that we as rheumatologists stand up and say, okay, this is a disease, and we are going to help these patients. Maybe we don't have a treatment immediately available, but by doing good research and by trial and error, I think we can help these patients better than somebody who has no experience at all in this disease. It is a systemic disease. It's not only the fatigue and the fibromyalgia, but they also have, for instance, POTS, postural tachycardia syndrome. We have a lot of experience with that as well. They have Zika, so dry eyes, dry mouth. We have a lot of experience with that as well. They have IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. So it's a whole spectrum of symptoms that these patients have that we as rheumatologists have a lot of experience with. Our research actually, before COVID came, already was focused on chronic fatigue in our patients with rheumatic diseases. And what we found is that actually about 50% of our patients that are well treated with biologicals, etc., still have a lot of issues and fulfill the criteria of chronic fatigue syndrome, especially the patients with vasculitis and with systemic sclerosis, because those are the two hot topics that we study in Edmonton. So it is an important issue, not only in long COVID, but also in other patients that we see just with systemic rheumatic diseases.
So that's a lot of information for a patient to process. And certainly what you've made very clear is that obviously early detection diagnosis is very important, but it's very complicated. And if you're not seeing your rheumatologist as much as you're seeing your family physician or pharmacist, how a patient can describe their symptoms, and having a good conversation, possibly with their GP or with their pharmacist, could get them over to see their to see their rheumatologist, who I think is from a patient perspective, we agree that you have a very important role to play here. But that it seems to me that process of getting a diagnosis is, could be very, very challenging, and particularly for certain patient populations. And I'm thinking of underserved populations, people living in rural, remote communities, et cetera. So that question around early diagnosis and getting some form of treatment is so critical. Can you talk just a little bit more, because you said, you know, as the science is evolving, we're trying to figure out protocols and what we can do for patients. What is the state of the treatment plan right now for a person living with a, let's say, an autoimmune disease, inflammatory arthritis, who has long COVID? What does that look like?
At present, there is no treatment approved for long COVID, but there are many symptoms, and these symptoms we can address. So, for instance, if you have postural tachycardia syndrome, we all explain to the patient you have to drink at least 2.5 liter fluid per day, you have to eat extra salt, at least 5 gram per day, and if that doesn't help enough, we give you a low dose of a beta blocker, so propranolol. If you have IBS, we can say, okay, look at your diet, try the FODMAP diet, so to eliminate certain things from the diet, especially sugar or dairy or gluten or fructose. There's a, you may try probiotics, you may, if you have diarrhea with it, from we our grandmothers, we learned already that peppermint oil is good. So there's lots of these symptoms that we know quite well, and we can address. So the fibromyalgia symptoms, for instance, SSRI or Cymbalta, SSNRI medication can help. In addition, we try to improve the brain fog and the pain with low dose naltrexone. So there's different options that all rheumatologists know very well. So that's still the first step. And then, of course, the second step is, are there can the patient participate in a trial where we try to get these patients even better? Because there is no definite treatment yet, but with new diseases, as it is always, we hope to have soon good trials so that we can say, okay, this treatment will help the patient.
You mentioned about the this one of the specialties at the U of A that you're involved with is around research around vasculitis.
Right.
And I'd like to talk about some of the work that you're doing in Alberta. And I should add to your bio here and to let people know that the Netherlands' loss was Canada's gain when you were recruited from Maastricht University in the Netherlands. I think it was around 2017, 2018 when you came out to the U of A. And I'd like to talk to you about some of the work that you're leading at the U of A. And I should also obviously reference that the background there does certainly reflect the Netherlands roots that you obviously continue to celebrate. That's not the Group of Seven, let's put it that way. I'd like to talk about the work at the U of A. My understanding is you're developing a translational research laboratory to study vascular immunology. Vasculitis can sort of works alongside different forms of rheumatology, but you're leading that effort there. So maybe first talk to describe to our audience just the what vasculitis is and its relation to autoimmune disease. And then let's narrow the focus then to the work, the actual work that you're helping lead.
So vasculitis is inflammation of the blood vessels, and blood vessels we have everywhere. So inflammation of blood vessels can manifest as any symptom that you can think of. But most often patients do have joint issues. They have quite often nose and sinus infections. They can have lung and kidney involvement, but they also can have severe headache and blurred vision and blindness. So my work started with my thesis in 1984 when we discovered an autoantibody in some patients with vasculitis. That autoantibody is called ANCA, and we discovered that ANCA was directed to either proteinase 3, a protein in neutrophils, or myeloperoxidase, another protein in neutrophils. And so these ANCAs were important because until then it was very difficult to make a diagnosis of certain forms of vasculitis, at that time called Wegener's granulomatosis, Churg-Strauss syndrome, or microscopic polymyalgias. But with this test, it was much easier to get an early diagnosis. Not only the ANCA appeared to be of diagnostic importance, but also pathophysiological, because we developed animal models, and then we could induce ANCA in the animal model, in the animals, and then induce vasculitis just by inducing ANCA in these animals. So it's an important pathophysiological finding. And that changed also the treatment of vasculitis, because originally we all used the Fauci scheme, Anthony Fauci, now famous because of COVID, but at that time he was a vasculitis doctor. And that scheme schedule was prednisone, high-dose prednisone in combination with cyclophosphamide, which is a very toxic drug. So because it's clear that there is an antibody, we hypothesized that if you just remove the cells that produce these antibodies, the B cells, that could replace cyclophosphamide. Now, that appeared indeed the case. So nowadays we treat with high-dose prednisone in combination with rituximab. But in my lab, there was also another finding that in the animal model, we treated the animals with anti-complement therapy. And surprisingly, if we pre-treated the animals with anti-complement, no vasculitis occurred at all. And if we developed the vasculitis and then give the animals anti-complement, then the vasculitis was much less severe. This was a finding in 2006. And recently, actually last year, avacopan, a complement blocker, has been introduced in vasculitis and is now going to replace prednisone. So, prednisone, which is also a very toxic drug, is probably going to the back and not much, not used anymore that much, and not giving all these side effects. So that's basically vasculitis, and that's a certain form of vasculitis. Nowadays, we call that even ANCA-associated vasculitis. So from the finding in 1984, it transitioned the whole field of vasculitis. Our current research here in Alberta is mostly focusing actually on the late effects of the treatment of vasculitis, or of so we are very good now able to treat active vasculitis, whereas many patients died in the past. Nowadays, the survival rate has increased incredibly, above 95% of the patients survive with all these new drugs that we have. But if we treat patients, we see them every 3 months in the clinic, and they feel okay. But what they say is, I feel so tired and I can't return to my normal life. So the quality of life of these patients is still rather poor, whereas the disease is totally in remission. So there's no active disease anymore, but the patients do not feel well. So that's basically the focus of our research here in Edmonton, where in the translational lab, we focus actually on the mitochondria, which are very important organelles in the cell that produce energy. Also in long COVID, but also in vasculitis, that's a major issue. And we're currently not only studying vasculitis, but also systemic sclerosis and other important autoimmune rheumatic disease. And in that disease, we found already clearly a mitochondrial signature that predicts whether the patient is going to have very severe fatigue all the time or that the patient actually recovers after treatment. So it is yes or no. You have patients that are actually doing fine, but there are also patients who are not recovering well and have a poor quality of life. And we estimate actually that about half of our patients have that poor quality of life after treatment. So it is a major issue, and there's really much more research needed to see how we can improve the quality of life of these patients.
Wow. You truly are pioneering work in the advancement of care for our audience, for people living with inflammatory arthritis particularly, and in the focused areas of long COVID and vasculitis. I'm going to remind people that at the end of this episode, we're going to have links where they can find out more information about those two subject areas and about the incredible work that you're doing, Dr. Cohen-Tabart. A real pleasure meeting you today. And I think as your work evolves, I really look forward to being able to follow up with you. Certainly, as a partner to researchers like you, we're in the same business of translating knowledge as efficiently as possible to our audience, and that certainly is a key focus for your work there in Edmonton. So we look forward to continuing this relationship and really appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Okay. Thank you, Kelly. Have a nice
And
day.
thank you. And I'd like to thank our audience for joining us. There'll be another episode coming from the annual meeting in Winnipeg for you to stay tuned to. And thanks again for joining us today. Goodbye.